Chair calls the Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform to order. We do have a quorum, and the first item of business is to take care of our minutes. Representative Johnson, you're right. I look back, we've got quite a few minutes to approve here. Let's the chair will commit not to let that happen again. I think we have a motion from Representative Christensen.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move and approve the minutes from February 20th through the 28th meetings and the second joint meeting.
So that's members, the minutes are in your packets. They're titled the 20th, 21st, 26th, 27th, 28th. And then there was an additional, the joint meeting with our Commerce Subcommittee discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we have three bills up today. My hope and goal is to get through them, so we don't meet this evening. We have reserved a meeting this evening, and there's a number of committees, including our sister committee, Judiciary, that has scheduled evening hearings this week, and so I want to avoid us having to, or minimize how many committees and members are hopping back and forth, but I think this is doable, and I think we could spend at least 20 minutes, possibly 30 minutes on each bill. So with that, I'm going to ask Representative Vang to come forward for House File 793. Oh, yes. And then, members, our theme today is Responsible on Cannabis Day. We've got several bills that we want to talk about in terms of approaching the regulation of cannabis in our state. In a way that is responsible, that minimizes, in some aspects, I would argue, the over-criminalization. I think you're going to hear some common sense bills related to that. And so with that, I'm wondering if I can have a member move Senator Vang's bill. Thank you. Vice Chair Edelson moves that House File 793 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And there are no amendments, and so with that, Representative Vang, welcome to the committee. It's a pleasure to have you here for the first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Samantha Vang, for the record, here to present on House File 793. To provide some context, the latest federal farm bill have taken hemp off the Controlled Substance Act, issuing it as an agricultural commodity and therefore legalizing hemp. This bill is simply building off of that legislation by stating CBD derived from hemp is not a controlled substance, and by possessing or selling CBD derived from hemp is not a crime. As we all may know, hemp is a cousin of marijuana that doesn't give you the high due to its low THC content. Hemp is defined as THC level below 0.3% on a dry weight basis. And during the pilot program, when the federal first allowed Minnesota to grow hemp for research, they found that all hemp grown were well below the 0.3% on average. Was closer to 0.01% THC level. This bill will provide some clarity for hemp growers and various stakeholders as it gains popularity and interest across the state. And I do have Charlie here, who is a hemp producer in Waconia, to testify in support of this bill.
Fantastic. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Levine. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Charles Levine. I'm the owner of Hemp Acres. Our farm is based in Waconia. I'm a grower and processor of industrial hemp, and I've been part of the program since 2016 and an advocate for all things hemp related.
Very well. Is there more, Representative Vang?
We are open for any questions.
Fantastic. Are there questions for Mr. Levine or Representative Vang? Representative Johnson, followed by Representative O'Neill.
Chair Mariani, I'm not sure if the Representative Vang or the testifier could answer this question. But one issue that we do have is the level of THC. I know talking to some people, once they do their best to get as much THC out of the oils as possible. I got a couple questions, but the first one is, what level do you think should be allowed of THC in these oils and salves and stuff that they do use?
Professor Vang or Mr. Levine? I think the testimony earlier is that the average was a 0.01% in hemp.
Yes.
And the threshold, what was the threshold again?
0.3%.
0.3%. So to Representative Johnson's question, Representative Johnson, you're looking for their opinion on what, where they might best maximize the, and perhaps if I can just add a little bit to that, Mr. Levine, is there any processing advantage, efficiency advantage, relative to maximizing the THC level, so long as you're under the 0.3%?
I can speak to that side that during the process, it goes through its filtration, and we can remove all of the THC from our final product, so there's no residual THC in any end product that we'd be selling to consumers.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
Chair Mariani, and again to the testifier. You have that process to get rid of it or to remove it, and I know in my area I've been contacted by a couple of different cities that have the shops in the store, and they are finding THC in the oils and stuff like that as well. That's why I'm wondering what level we should be at. But there again, you mentioned that you have the ability to remove it. Since THC is a on the schedules of the drug schedules, is it, I imagine you have to have some special licensing and requirements and documentation. And what I'm hearing is once it's pulled out, the concentrate is very high levels of THC. I'm just wondering how you dispose of that.
Mr. Levine, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just clarify again that the legal definition of hemp is 0.3% THC level, and during the pilot program, if as they do the tests, if they found any plants that were over above that threshold, they will just destroy that field or that acre.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, again, during the processing, there's still a lot of THC taken out of the out of the product, and it becomes a concentrate that gets very high. What is the process to dispose of that THC, and if there's any licensing or requirements to make sure that it's disposed of properly and not get into the wrong hands?
That might be a question for Mr. Levine in terms of your process. So what happens to the extract? How do you handle
this? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with the level of 0.3% THC, we can actually take that and add it back into end products and not exceed 0.3% or destroy it entirely. A process of recording that would just be part of the procedure of the manufacturing process.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, so I take it that there's no oversight, no licensing, because this can be a dangerous substance, especially when it gets in the young kids, to make sure that the product is not used improperly after it's been, or the concentrate is not used improperly or ends up on the street. That's my concern.
Mr. Levine?
I would say that if there's certain procedures that are put in place for a manufacturer or processor to abide by disposing it of it in a proper manner, would be something to consider.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Marion, just one last question in this study that they've been doing in this temporary deal that was set up for setting this stuff up. Is there any licensing requirements or oversight by the state just on the production?
Representative Bang or Mr. Levine?
I think the MDA is currently waiting on federal guidelines, as when the federal farm bill was issued, they have stated that they will provide federal guidelines on regulating hemp, and they mentioned they will do that this year, and due to the government shutdown, that have delayed the process, and so MDA is just waiting to hear back from the federal to provide some guidelines on that regulation and licensee.
Very well. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious. I don't think you mentioned it, but is this an issue right now with law enforcement that they are concerned about CBD oil? I know it's pretty prevalent in most of the places I go. You can kind of see it on every shelf. So is this a concern of law enforcement that somehow something is missed in our statutes and need to be amended?
Law enforcement have taken a look at this. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, they seem to be supportive of this bill because they recognize that this hemp is now legalized. And so as long as it remains below that threshold of 3.3%, then they are just taking a wait-and-see approach, especially the FDA has not ruled as legalized, cannot be sold as a drug or a dietary supplement right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I was just curious, like, if there's, you know, actual court cases where someone, you know, has had an issue with law enforcement because they've been selling CBD oil. I didn't realize that this was even an issue. I've seen it so prevalently in little boutiques I like to go to. It's all over there, and people are using it for all kinds of ailments. I'm just curious that, you know, has law enforcement said, no, we're really concerned about CBD oil, we need the statutes to change so it's clear that this is a legal product? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, the state agencies are working with one another, especially the FDA right now is starting in March is going to look at CBD products, and that will make it easier for law enforcement to clarify on these issues. They are taking more of a wait-and-see approach. They do see that the Board of Pharmacy, Director Cody, has mentioned that, you know, law enforcement could see this, that hemp is not a illegal controlled substance, and so now they will not take over that area. So,
Representative Boston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question was asked and answered, but I will tell you, in agriculture, as this crop is continuing to grow and people are starting to look at developing processing plants, one of the big holdups right now is that THC content that is left after the production. And Representative Johnson is right on that it's very potent, very powerful. But, Chair, we have some law enforcement people that are here in the audience, and I'd love to have them come up and let us know how they feel about this.
That certainly would be appropriate. Let's do that. We do have some more questions, but if there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against, then Representative Paulson was particularly inquiring to see if anyone from our law enforcement community wishes to weigh in. Yeah, if you could all just sort of make your way up to the front of some chairs, that way you can be teed up to testify. Please come forward, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please give us your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, hi. My name is Zach Robbins. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and I am counsel to the newly created Minnesota Hemp Association.
So, Mr. Robbins, I think you're not with law enforcement. I'm not sure anyone responded with law enforcement, but we'll see if anybody still does, Representative Boston, and we'll come back.
Thank you.
Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am here to voice support in favor of HF 793 to legalize the possession of CBD, a non-harmful and non-psychoactive substance that can be extracted from the cannabis plant. This bill makes it legal to possess CBD extracted from industrial hemp, which is a cannabis plant defined as having 0.3% THC or less. Additionally, this bill helps to conform Minnesota law with federal law, specifically the 2018 Farm Bill signed into law last December. Due to the inherent medical benefits of CBD, this extract is increasingly popular in this state. Therefore, it is necessary to ensure that its legality for possession is unquestioned. I would urge the committee to support this bill to ensure that Minnesotans can freely possess CBD. Thank you, sir.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Stick around for any possible questions. We do have another testifier. If you can come forward. And Representative Poston, I haven't forgotten yet, so we'll keep the floor open to see if anyone from law enforcement wishes to weigh in. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please give us your name.
Hi, my name is Matthew Kaiser.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am a current medical cannabis patient in Minnesota, but I'm unable to utilize the medication in this state due to my circumstances. So I do utilize a hemp-based product, and I don't know if this is the specific issue that law enforcement has, other than, you know, the specific THC content in the extracts, but currently, under Minnesota's medical cannabis program, there's no raw flowers being sold, or what are being called buds, and the hemp products there are. And so, one of the problems that I can see from a law enforcement perspective, and something that I worry about, is the perception of being in possession of a hemp product, a full hemp product, a hemp flower, and it being perceived as being just plain cannabis. From a legal perspective, that's scary in my position. And then, so I think some clarification on this is a legal product federally and at the state level, and this is not. I think some clarification on that would be great.
Very well. Thank you. Again, is there anyone here from the law enforcement community that could respond to Representative Poston's question? Poston, we're going to lay this over, and so we will come back to this conversation when we construct our omnibus bill that might offer another opportunity, as well as an opportunity between now and then for you and others to work with Representative Vang in terms of your particular question. But please proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my question.
Thank you. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill. I support decriminalizing it. I'm just actually curious if we have any known instances where it has been criminalized.
Representative Vang.
In terms of specific cases, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm wondering if any of the other testifiers might have any knowledge. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you for the question. I'm not aware of any instances in this state. However, it is a problem in other states, namely New York and Idaho, Texas and Alabama are four such states where there have been incidents where CBD products have been taken off the shelves. Having said that, most of those incidents took place before the signing of the 2018 Farm Bill, which did provide some much-needed clarification. I would say, though, that I believe New York, there have been instances of products being taken off the shelf as recently as last month.
Senator Edelson?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Vang, people sometimes use CBD, say in instances of having anxiety or chronic pain, possibly inflammation. Can you tell me, do you know that these CBD is being used in lieu of a different drug, say such as instance, if you have anxiety, you would take Xanax. Do you know any instances where this happens?
Actually, we had a patient here, perhaps could weigh in on that. Mr. Kaiser, please. Welcome back, Mr. Kaiser.
My name is Matthew Kaiser again. So yes, I am a medical patient who is unable to use medical cannabis that's provided by the state. So I do utilize CBD product, full spectrum hemp flowers, as they're called. And my diagnoses are PTSD and ulcerative colitis. So I utilize the CBD, the full spectrum CBD. It's as an anti-inflammatory as well as an anti-anxiety. It helps with my hunger. It helps regulate my sleep. There's a multitude of effects that the full spectrum cannabis products do provide, which I have found I can only get from a full spectrum product. I've diligently tried to find a product that will work because, unfortunately, the CBD market, it's expanding greatly with not a lot of oversight. So there's a lot of so-called snake oil out there that doesn't have the amount of CBD, it doesn't have what it's claiming to have. And so that is why I utilize a raw product in the case of flowers. And as I mentioned before, the full spectrum CBD product is what works. It works in conjunction with the trace amounts of THC, which are in such a small amount that they are not psychoactive in any way, but they do benefit greatly. And I utilize, like I said, for inflammation, so I'm on Pentasa and Remicade injections, and I've been able to get off of anti-anxiety drugs due to the CBD, as well as sleep, completely cut out, trazodone, and forget one other one, but it was a few months ago for reoccurring nightmares.
Very well. Okay. Representative Grassl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for our attorney there on the on your left, my right. You said there's inherent medical benefits. I guess have the CBD's effectiveness in treating medical conditions been tested by the American Medical Association?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I am not qualified to answer that question. I do not know the answer.
Representative Grassl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if you're saying there's inherent medical benefits, then I would think before you say that those things, you might want to check with the AMA to see what the effectiveness is, if any.
Thank you for the comment. There have been many, many studies performed and studies that I have referenced and would be able to provide you after this session, sir. But my answer was in regards to the AMA. I am not aware as to whether that specific entity has conducted studies.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd pose the same question to the author then as well.
Representative Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say the same thing to you as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I will say the same thing to you as well.
So neither one of you know what the AMA has to say about the effectiveness of this as far as medical benefits, if any?
No, sir. I do not know of the stance of the AMA. As mentioned, I would be happy to provide links to other studies performed by other entities, sir.
Someone is approaching the witness stand who might have some information. Is that? Why don't you come forward, sir? Come to the witness table, please.
I don't have any information on the internet.
Give us your name. That would be terrific. Thank you.
My name is John Barti. I'm with the Minnesota Campaign for Full Legalization. I don't have any information as to the AMA, but the World Health Organization has recommended reclassifying both CBD and THC because of the health benefits that have been proven in the inside and outside of the United States, and I could put the article on record if any guys want me to do that.
If you could share that, that would be terrific, Mr. Marti. Thank you. Representative Christensen.
I think a lot of it is covered, and I agree with Representative, thank you, Chair, with Representative O'Neill. It's everywhere. I mean, it's at Kowalski's. It's, I mean, it's everywhere. So, I mean, not that Kowalski's is the ultimate, you know, well, if it's at Kowalski's. You know, so I can see where there needs to be some conformity that happens with the new legislation last year in terms of hemp. You know, I would like to see it go forward. I think I would like to see maybe a couple more studies. I agree. Maybe a couple more studies. I think just to really clear things up for us, I think that might be helpful. So if you could send those along, that would be great.
Appreciate that, Mr. Robbins. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Vang, and then I just wanted to address Representative Grossel's point in terms of unregulation. You know, vitamins and supplements in the state of Minnesota and throughout this country are not regulated to the extent they should be, so I don't see that as being any different than the CBD oil. So I just wanted to make that point that out for the audience.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. With that, members, we're going to move on to the next bill. And so we'll be laying this over, but Representative Vang, you get the last word here for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just appreciate all of your support.
Thank you. I appreciate working with you as we move forward with this. And so with that, the Chair lays over House File 793 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And then Representative Quam is here.
Yes.
Please come forward, sir. And we'll need a motion to lay over for possible inclusion from a committee member. Is anyone? So Representative Poston, thank you. Representative Poston moves that House File 469 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Quam, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Actually, the first time this bill was I dropped it back in my third term when I was on this committee, because frankly, in statute, which is probably pretty appropriate, you know, scheduled drugs, controlled substances, if you have a detected level, then you could be charged for driving under the influence. Alcohol, we have very good data, and we have, you know, pretty decent standards and levels. Other medications and drugs, we don't. Medical science is improving. Our tests are improving. So we can have, probably in the near future, we can detect very low levels or trace amounts of some medications. Now, some meds, they can, get stored in your body in fat. And then when you get better out of the hospital and you start being active again, you can have some detectable levels. But one thing that really bothered me was Adderall. It's controlled. It's a scheduled drug. And it actually is prescribed to help, you know, teenagers, college students, people with attention deficit disorder be more attentive in their tasks so they'd actually be a better driver. Well, if that was ever detected in a test, you were in an accident, it wasn't your fault, you know, by law, you're driving under the influence. There could be trace amounts after you have a outpatient procedure or inpatient a few days later that might be detectable. Future tests, we don't know. So let us say medical community, the testing experts, what should be adequate or appropriate levels, so that if it's below this level, there's not an issue, you're not going to be impaired. I mean, we've all had, some medication where on the bottle it says, do not operate heavy equipment, but we don't think 2 days later that we're you know, and we probably aren't impaired, but if it's detectable. I had law enforcement talk to me several years ago. They had an instance where their department, if you were on the scene where a firearm was discharged, you could be handling traffic. But every officer on the scene gets a blood test. And that seems like a prudent, reasonable process. But if you, a few days earlier, had some procedure in a traceable amount, you could not only be charged for driving under the influence, but because you were on duty driving a squad, there are other ramifications. So I think it's just prudent that the state explore what information and science there is out there to start setting appropriate threshold limits for schedule drugs. And I'm open for questions. We do have a testifier from the U of M.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Kwan. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Dr. Spanis Martin. We had a meeting a few days ago, and you enlightened me to a vast world of emerging knowledge in this regard, so I look forward to your testimony today.
My name is Donna Spanis Martin, and I am a professor of medical laboratory science at the University of Minnesota, although I am not here representing the views and policies of the University of Minnesota. They make me say that. I have a PhD in biochemistry, am a certified medical laboratory scientist. I teach clinical chemistry and body fluid analysis, including drug analysis. Chairman Mariani, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before this committee. As the state of Minnesota considers the legalization of marijuana for recreational use, I want adequate consideration to be given as to how the state will define driving while impaired. Measuring Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the primary psychoactive component of cannabis, is not like measuring a blood alcohol concentration. Ethanol is water-soluble and volatile, so it can be easily measured in the breath and in the blood. There is a clear national standard as to when your blood alcohol concentration is too high for you to be driving, 0.08%. Setting a marijuana-related impairment level is much more complicated. THC is fat-soluble and is rapidly removed from the blood. It can decrease by as much as 90% within 90 minutes. It is then slowly released from fatty tissues, so lower concentrations can be found in the blood for weeks. This also presents a problem because there is not a linear relationship between blood THC concentration and the degree of impairment. With a 5 nanogram per milliliter THC blood concentration, which is the level that they've set in Colorado and I believe a few other states, a first-time user would show definite signs of impairment, while someone who used marijuana 5 times a week would not likely be impaired with this blood THC concentration. A study conducted in Norway compared blood THC concentration of drivers suspected of driving under the influence of cannabis to the status of their impairment, the amount that they were impaired, which was evaluated by a physician. Drivers were classified as either impaired or not impaired. The impaired drivers had a higher mean THC concentration of 2.5 nanograms per milliliter, which is about half of what the Colorado limit was. So that was the average. Compared to the drivers who were assessed as not impaired, and their mean concentration was 1.9 nanograms per milliliter. However, the blood THC concentration of the non-impaired drivers ranged from 0.32 to 24.8 nanograms per milliliter, which is 5 times what the Colorado limit is, and they're still considered to be not impaired. States have put forth a wide range of definitions as to what they consider to be driving under the influence of cannabis. Colorado has defined intoxication as a driver whose blood THC concentration tests higher than 5 nanograms per milliliter. Looking at the Norwegian study I just mentioned, that means a number of regular users who were not impaired would have been classified as driving under the influence. And there would also have been a number of drivers who were impaired that would not have been classified as driving under the influence. Another study in Sweden stated if you leave that intoxication level at 5 nanograms per milliliter, you miss 90% of the intoxicated drivers. Other states have defined impairment as 1, 2, or 3 nanograms per milliliter, and some have said the presence of any amount of THC in the blood is impaired driving. Some states have specially trained police officers, and they determine if the person is impaired. So it's entirely up to the officer who stops the driver. This has also raised concerns because this can be subjective and is subject to racial bias. Someone who has previously had poor experience with the police may perform worse on field sobriety tests due to nervousness rather than being impaired. Some states are using saliva tests, which have some advantages but also have limitations. No published research has demonstrated a significant association between saliva and whole blood concentrations, and differences in saliva concentrations for smoking, vaporizing, and ingesting marijuana need to be studied further to establish quantitative and qualitative differences. Because dry mouth is a common side effect of cannabis use, insufficient saliva volume can also be a problem for testing. Another issue with driving under the influence of cannabis is that the impairment from cannabis is very different from that seen with ethanol intoxication. So the sobriety test will need to be different. A field sobriety test for ethanol might involve following a pen with your eyes while the officer moves it back and forth, walking 9 steps heel to toe, and standing on one leg for 30 seconds. This test will identify 88% of alcohol-impaired drivers, but only 30% of marijuana-impaired drivers. Alcohol increases the willingness of a driver to take risks, so they tend to drive faster and overestimate their skills, and the opposite seems to be true for drivers who are high on marijuana. They can pass memory, addition, and subtraction tests, but when confronted with doing multiple tasks or something unexpected, that they have difficulty. One article I read stated, "It's typical to see a young adolescent with 3 or 4 other kids in the car," she said of stone driving. "He's aware he might be impaired, so he's driving carefully. But then he sees an old man in the middle of the street. All of his senses say, this guy is there, but will be out of the way by the time I get there. But then the old man drops his keys, and he's slower than the kid expected. By the time it takes to process a change in the situation, there's an accident." Another article stated that drivers under the influence of alcohol are 20 times more likely to be in an automobile accident than non-impaired drivers, while drivers under the influence of marijuana are only twice as likely to be in an accident. However, the combination of alcohol and marijuana increases the risk even greater than the 20-fold increase. So the use of a combination of drugs while driving may be another issue that needs to be addressed. In conclusion, as Minnesota considers the legalization of marijuana, I would like them also to consider the legal issues that need to be addressed for driving under the influence of marijuana. It is not as simple and straightforward as it is with ethanol and needs to be examined as we move forward. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Dr. Spanis-Martin. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. This Sunday I saw Senator Jensen on Channel 4 News, and he talked about some states are looking at a combination between the cheek swab as well as the field sobriety tests. Have you found any states that are using a combination of different tests to determine the impairment versus just one or another?
Dr. Spanis-Martin.
I think there's a wide range of states that are using various levels, various testing. Yes, there are some states that are using a combination of things. There's a company in California that says they've now come out with a breathalyzer test. It hasn't been field tested yet, but it will test for both THC and alcohol in the same breath test. So there are companies that are working on developing better tests, and I think right now the best method is having some sort of combination. So I would agree you need more than just a THC level in the person, and probably also more than just a police officer's evaluation.
Very well. I believe Judge Small is here, and sir, I'm wondering if you can come forward from the County Attorneys Association, because I'm curious about what's currently happening in terms of stops and prosecutions other than possession relative to this issue of impaired driving. And it could well be there's nothing, but just if you can fill us in a little bit, sir, in terms of how law enforcement is currently approaching this issue when you have a driver that is high on marijuana.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Small, and I am the executive director of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, and I sure would like to call a friend on this one. He would probably be just as angry with me. No, he's right there. Oh. So Sheriff Leslie from Dakota County, who's actually out there and does this.
Very well. Thank you, Judge Small.
Mr. Chair, members, to say that I'm out there is a little bit too much. I ride a desk, but I do see the reports that do come across. And so when we have someone who's clearly impaired, yet shows no signs of alcohol intoxication, then we invoke implied consent and ask them to take a blood test. And right now, any measure of THC in the blood is prima facie of impairment. So that's an automatic. There is no level. If it comes back from the lab that there's THC in the blood, that's deemed enough of a level of presence to deem them guilty of driving while intoxicated.
Very well. I just learned something, and I think we all did. So, and I'm sorry, I need to get your name officially on the record.
Mr. Chair, Tim Leslie, Dakota County Sheriff.
Thank you, sir. So I'm wondering, Judge Small, then, I'm hearing that any level of THC then triggers a understanding of driving under impaired. Is that, if that's the case, then what can you tell us in terms of what prosecutors do with that? Do they prosecute that? Do they look for different standards, you know, of the concentration of THC?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it would be my best judgment that it would be the driving behavior that would be linked to the explanation of whatever is causing that driving behavior. So the prosecutor would look at what the driving behavior was, and then with that additional information of the presence of a substance, a controlled substance, that would be the proof.
Judge Small, that makes sense to me, particularly in light of Dr. Spanis Martin's testimony earlier about our long history and knowledge of alcohol and being able to confidently set, a level of concentration with confidence that that's producing impaired driving. And so this just really begs the whole question of Representative Quam's, effort here is, can we get to that point relative to the THC? We do have some questions, so perhaps you can remain there. It'd be great, Representative Johnson.
Question is for the sheriff.
Oh, for the sheriff, please, sir.
Chair Mariano, Sheriff, I'm probably one of the few individuals sitting at this table has actually charged somebody with prescription DWI, and I believe it's two convictions I've got for it. It's very difficult to do. But my question deals with more on the THC levels. I've also had done those driving while impaired. But the test results I got from BCA back, they didn't, of course, I've been retired for a little over 6 years now. But the test results never came back with a level. They just said positive or negative for THC. Is that, if that's still the same process?
Sheriff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, that's correct. It's the presence of that tested substance, whatever the police officer asks to be tested for, cocaine, methamphetamine, they test for them all, and so it'll show on the report which one was present.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, that's what I was getting at, is for those chemicals other than alcohol, they don't give a percentage and what the level is. It's just if it's present. It could be super high for THC. It could be real low. Right now, they're illegal, and so if you have that in your system. Now, for prescription drugs, that's another story because it's very difficult to do. You have to know what the prescription is. They have to calculate what the level is normally if they're inside their prescription. And the ones that I've been able to get convictions on have been able to prove in court that they were 4, 5, 6 times above the level of what their prescription would do. Plus, on a prescription, you have to know what the prescription is to have them physically test for that drug.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you, Judge Small, and Sheriff Leslie, for allowing me to drag you up here to field the question that is a little bit difficult, but it's part of our ongoing learning and discovery process here. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on the bill, pro or con, in the audience? I thought maybe I saw a hand up earlier. Yeah, please come forward. I thought I saw you raise your hand earlier, so I just wanted to make sure I'm
being My name's Emilio Medina, and I'm with the Minnesota. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Please have a seat, sir.
Sorry about that.
And then, yes, give us your name. And
my name's Emilio Medina, and I'm with the Minnesota Campaign for Full Legalization. I just had a question that I could piggyback on. So in regards to intoxicated driving, there are over 15,000 Minnesota medical patients, as well as in 31 medical states all across the country. We're seeing thousands of Americans allowed to drive. And we're not hearing outrageous stories about people getting into accidents or statistics now. And although nobody's advocating driving high on cannabis, if we're being honest, it's happening. So it's not a question of people are doing it, it's a question of how does it affect you. Right now, we're not seeing statistics come out of legal states for medical patients and otherwise of, you know, accidents and deaths being up. So that was my question. How does it negate to we're allowing thousands of medical patients to drive perfectly fine every day all over the country? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Medina. It is a good question. It is outside of the scope, I think, of this bill, but I would comment very quickly that I think perhaps that sets up some kind of inquiry that we may want to consider relative to behaviors and practices among the driving public and whether we're collecting data about that relative to, unsafe driving. If we're not doing that, is that something that we might want to consider collecting? Representative Quam and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill is medicine or drug agnostic. And in fact, the reason why I started in my third term, it was before medical marijuana was available. So the intent of this bill is to address that question. Because if we happen to have we use science and medical experts and we set appropriate levels, then if it's a prescription stop, we will know this is the level. We're in grave chalk dust land, or you're guilty. So that's the intent, no matter what kind of medicine, what kind of drug. We try to have an appropriate level or threshold, and that will clear up confusion for the law enforcement and clear up confusion for the courts and for our citizens.
Representative Johnson, I think that parallels what you were sharing earlier, prescription drugs in particular.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, exactly. It's we have to look at what the prescription level is on that, what the level would be under that prescription. If they're way over it, then it's an issue. But I do have a clarification on that previous testifier.
Please, sir.
Back when Colorado was still just medical marijuana, there was a very comprehensive study on that, and it showed the use of just on the medical side, the number of traffic accidents and the number of traffic-related deaths had spiked dramatically.
You may want to get a hold of that study. Dr. Spanis, Martin.
One of the things that's mentioned in some of the articles, the reason that you don't see as much of an increase with marijuana as you do with alcohol, and I mentioned alcohol is at 20 times the risk of being in an accident if you're driving while under the influence, and at 2 times the risk if you're under the influence of marijuana. But one article said that alcohol abusers or alcohol users tend to be doing that outside at a bar, so they have to drive home. Marijuana users tend to do it at home, and I think a lot of people are taking their medications at home, so they're not as much on the road also. But there is an increase with both.
Very well, thank you. Mr. Kaiser, I think you wanted to weigh in as well, and then we're going to try to move quickly to get to our last bill here.
Yeah, I just have a quick comment. Matthew Kaiser. So I think this raises a good point with the last bill that we were talking about, too, is that if we're doing something based completely on levels, then a completely legal product such as a full-spectrum CBD, over time the THC will build up in the system because it's fat-soluble. And so somebody does have the potential of failing a drug test, of showing positive for greater than trace amounts of THC simply because it builds up over time. And I think that this is a good area of research for our universities here to study is, you know, the differences in, you know, patients and different levels of use, metabolism, activity levels. That's it.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Representative Quam, you get the last word here.
Thank you for the consideration. And again, this is to explore and try and get more information so Minnesota as a state can do a better job.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Thank you for bringing us this bill. The chair, and I thank you, Dr. Spanis-Martin, as well. The chair then lays House File 469 over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And members, our last bill is Chair Dean's House File 213. And we have a testifier from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, Dave Brown, if you can come forward, sir. And Representative Dean then moves that House File 2013 be laid over for possible inclusion on the omnibus bill. Representative Dean, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members and members of the public. This bill is, I think, long overdue. You know, we know that in the past, Minnesota had decriminalized small quantities of marijuana. But at the same time, there were quantities that, when you were above that, the penalties were fairly significant. And, of course, repeat offenders would also have some issues regarding relative to the quantities. So this this bill takes a look at those quantities of cannabis. And it, or marijuana, and it changes the levels for sale, and it changes the levels for possession. I think if you look at your House File summary, you can see the controlled substance crime in number 3, which it sort of mixes possession and sale. I'd like to try to break those apart so members can digest them a little bit. Sale of 5 grams or less would still be maintained as a petty misdemeanor. More than 5 grams, but not more than 10 grams would be a misdemeanor. More than 10 grams, but not more than 42.5 grams would be a gross misdemeanor. And more than 42.5 grams would still be a felony. When it comes to possession, 42.5 grams or less would be a petty misdemeanor. More than 42.5 grams, but no more than 100 grams, would be a misdemeanor. More than 100 grams, but no more than 250 grams, would be a gross misdemeanor. And greater than 250 grams would still be maintained in a felony. And for those who aren't the best at international measurements. 42 grams is roughly an ounce and a half. So this bill would put it in statute, would define these, and I think go a long ways to undoing some of the harm that's been done over the past 30 to 40 years on the war on drugs. So that's the bill. Mr. Chair, and I'll turn it over to the testifier.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Dean. Mr. Brown, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much. I'm David Brown. I'm the Chief Deputy Hennepin County Attorney. Want to thank Representative Dean for bringing this bill forward. Our office supports graduated penalties for the possession and sale of marijuana. The County Attorneys Association supports the idea of graduated penalties. While I don't think we've had input from all the stakeholders, law enforcement, medical community, as to what those numbers should be, I think the numbers that are presented in this bill are an excellent starting point for that conversation, and we want to be part of that. We have a group of county attorneys getting together in the near future to talk about that, see where we're at with that. In terms of our office, the reason we're so supportive of this is that we have exercised our discretion to provide for some of this relief, where we will agree to give pre-charge diversion for possession of up to 100 grams of marijuana, where we will offer statutory stays of adjudication under Minnesota Statute 15218 if they're not eligible for our diversion program. We will offer a gross misdemeanor for possessions for people that aren't eligible for diversion. So we have taken some of those steps in our office, but of course that's just our office, and that's not uniform statewide, and that's asking prosecutors to exercise their discretion, which we're happy to do, but I think this is a conversation where you have possession right now of under 42 and a half grams being a petty misdemeanor, and for any amount over that, it goes immediately to a felony. And sale of any amount of leaf marijuana is a felony. That doesn't reflect what we need to be doing. And we want the input from law enforcement, from our community stakeholders, from other prosecutors in setting those amounts. And I think there are some other issues to be raised. Resins. People talk about resinous marijuana, but it's hard for the BCA to actually quantify that as a resin when we're dealing with oils and waxes and candies. And we support graduated penalties for those as well, but it needs a careful discussion about what those amounts are going to be. Typically in our office, for those waxes, we won't charge the felony until we have 42 and a half grams of that. But again, or 85 or so dosage units, but that again is exercising our discretion. And in all of this, the legislature passed several years ago aggravating factors, firearms, sales to kids, all of those kinds of things. Take that out. We don't deal with that if the aggravating factors are present. But for a first-time person who possesses 70, 80 grams of marijuana, we're exercising our discretion to give diversion, to do something else. And I think this bill is a great start to the discussion about how can we graduate those penalties.
Very well. Thank you, County Attorney Brown. Are there any questions? Representative Johnson and Representative Long.
Chair Mariani, County Attorney. I'm just wondering, instead of getting the gram so people can understand, especially those that are watching us on television, 70, 80 grams, how many joints would that be approximately?
County Attorney Brown, I suspect it has something to do with the size of the joint.
I would say thank you, Mr. Chair, but I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair,
my law enforcement friends have told me for the sandwich bag. So think of the 42 and a half grams as a sandwich bag of marijuana, and depending on the person creating those joints, you're probably around 70. It's a fair amount of marijuana.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, County Attorney. I actually looked it up. The average is about 43 grams per joint. 70 to 80 grams. You're looking at close to 150 to 200 marijuana joints. That's a lot. That's a lot of kids in school getting joints. We want to avoid that. So I do have some concerns. Do we need to look at maybe changing these numbers? Absolutely, but I think we have to look at the proper numbers.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been told never to do math out loud. But when I look at 42.5 grams and divide that by 0.43 grams, I come closer to 100, not 100 to 200. So just to be clear that, you know, if we are looking at that, and granted, I it's been a long time since I've rolled a joint. But you know, I mean, it could be anywhere from really, really small to, you know, I mean, I had the Cheech and Chong album when I was young too. So, you know, your point is well taken, Representative Johnson, and I think the issue becomes the criminalization of it that we're talking about. And again, if we go for possession, if we go over 42.5 grams, it becomes a misdemeanor, and over 100 grams, that would then become a gross misdemeanor for possession. And when it comes to issues of sale, you know, more than 42.5 grams will still be a felony.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Dean. The reason I picked that number is because the testifier had talked about 70 plus grams, so that's why I knew it was 97 otherwise.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Dean, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's long overdue that we take a serious look at our drug possession laws, in particular for marijuana. The city that you and I both represent, Minneapolis, there's been some good data on the racial disparities that come with arrests and other prosecution for pure possession. And the data that I've seen show that white and black people across the country use marijuana at basically the same rate. So you would expect that we would be seeing similar rates of enforcement, but that's not what we've seen. And ACLU did a study of Minneapolis numbers where they found that from 2004 to 2012, black residents in Minneapolis were 11 and a half times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than white residents. So to put that another way, in 2012, there were 193 arrests of white Minneapolis residents for marijuana possession and 1,326 arrests for black residents. So that's pretty dramatic when you understand that the rates of usage are the same. There was also just last year a sting operation that was stopped in part because once the data came out about, and these were stings for small amounts, which I think would probably fit under the categories that you have in your bill, Representative Dean, they stopped the sting because 46 out of 47 of the people who were arrested were black. So I think just these two snapshots illustrate the real problem that we have, and this is a broader problem than marijuana, but in racial bias in our enforcement of laws, but it really is played out, I think, in a more dramatic way in marijuana than just about anything else I'm familiar with. And I'm just curious, these two examples are pretty telling, but wondering if you know of other research or data on racial disparities that we see around the state or around the country or in Hennepin County in marijuana enforcement and how this informed your bringing this bill forward. Representative Dean.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Long, I believe the national average for the disparity between African-American use and white people use about 8 to 1. So this would tell me that we're actually doing worse than other states. And, you know, the issue of disparities is something that I think is really, really critical. As I've talked to friends around issues related to the full legalization of cannabis, I have some friends that tell me, wow, do you think that's really going to happen? And this isn't really flippant or joking, but to many of my white friends, I tell them, it's already legal for you. because of the disparity of how an individual is treated when they have certain quantities. So this is actually trying to get to that point and trying to do away with the disparities that exist around our marijuana laws in the state of Minnesota, and also make them more uniform across the whole state as well.
Representative Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, the number I've seen for national disparities is 4-1 from black to white. So I think 11.5-1, we're considerably off track from even where, 4-1 is not acceptable, but 11-1 is pretty outrageous. Curious if you have any comments about what you've seen in Hennepin County as well.
County Attorney Brown.
Mr. Chair, Representative Long, obviously disparity is something we're very concerned about in our office, and I think what you've seen in our guidelines, we typically won't charge the sale of under 5 grams, and for smaller amounts, we won't any longer send somebody to prison for possession of marijuana with typically not at all. And for the sale, it's really with approval of the division manager. What we're trying to get at is some of these disparities and how they're enforced, and by offering diversion more often, both pre-charge and once the case is charged, offering diversion to people. And as I think I explained at an earlier hearing on bail, also for people that successfully complete our diversion program, allowing an automatic expungement. We helped pass a bill several years ago that allows the prosecutor to move for expungement. So if you complete that diversion program, remain law-abiding for a year, then we can go ahead and ask the court to expunge that record without the defendant having to come through and do that, which can be an expensive and time-consuming process. So what I really appreciate about Representative Dean's bill is an attempt statewide with some uniformity to get at this so that it's not just individual prosecutors exercising their discretion, but we have some statewide agreement on what this graduated penalty can look like. Of course, prosecutors are always still going to be able, either city attorneys with the misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, or the county attorneys in their felony role, to offer diversion in cases, but I think this is a great start at getting at that disparity and trying to impose fairness.
One more question, if I may, Mr. Chair. So I really commend Hennepin County Prosecutor's Office for taking these steps. I think they're much needed. I'm curious how much of an outlier you are in the state. Are other counties following suit?
County Attorney Brown.
Mr. Chair, Representative Long, I think what's not well understood, I think lots of prosecutors' offices do exercise their discretion to give diversion, to offer alternative dispositions. Obviously, we've got 87 county attorneys. There's a wide range of communities that they represent and a wide range of what that looks like. But as I said, we have a group getting together in the near future to talk about the numbers actually in Representative Dean's bill to see if we can come to some agreement on what those graduated penalties. So I think there's widespread agreement on graduated penalties, and now it's the hard work of what does that look like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
County Attorney Brown, not to press you, but any indication on when that statewide conversation among the county attorneys will take place?
Mr. Chair, before the end of the week. I mean, I think we understand this is this is something that has high interest. The MCAA board a couple weeks ago voted to support the concept of graduated penalties, and what they deferred was some conversation among a smaller group about what would those numbers look like and talk about the numbers that are here in this bill. So
very, very helpful timetable for us. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, both of you. Will you remind me what it was? Was it misdemeanor to felony before? Or no, I guess it would be no. You know, the penalties, there were two graduated steps, right? So the second one was felony. What was the first one?
County Attorney Brown.
Mr. Chair, Representative Christensen. two different things, possession and sale.
Okay.
So for possession, Minnesota has already decriminalized the possession of up to 42.5 grams. If you're caught with up to that, it's a petty misdemeanor, and it's punishable by a fine. No jail time, no, it's a fine. Okay. Any amount over that, it goes right to felony.
For so sale that, or possession?
No, just possession.
Just possession, okay.
Sale of any amount is a felony.
Okay.
So what I think Representative Dean's bill is getting at is in both of those instances, can we come to some agreement that it shouldn't go right from a decriminalized amount, a petty misdemeanor, to a felony? Can we find some rational graduation in those penalties, as we do in so many other areas, assaults and other things where we try and see, could there be something less than felony to start with?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think I support the bill. It looks like it should have been done a long time ago on it. So thanks for bringing it forward.
Senator Johnson.
Chair Mariani, one thing that was just touched on briefly and some concerns I've been hearing, especially from the law enforcement world, especially after they saw this bill, it's the issue of the concentrates. The difference between the high concentrated THC stuff and the green, the leaf. And then the fact, I believe it was in Colorado, they came up with a variety that is super high in THC. So if you have, let's say the 42 grams of leaf material, normal stuff we have here, just 2 grams of some of the concentrate is even stronger than that, of THC than that 42 grams. So how, the question is, how are we going to work this out? Because it's, sometimes it's not the weight that's the problem, it's the concentrate of it.
Mr. Chair, this bill is neutral on the concentration, and you know, we haven't addressed oils or resins or other types of things because those do vary quite a bit. I understand what I think you're getting at, and that is, you know, if you have 42.5 grams of, I don't know, supercharged, we'll call it, that's a little bit different than just, you know, a smaller level of THC. But again, to add layers on this relative to the graduation around quantity, I think would become a little bit cumbersome. And then, of course, we're relying a lot on labs and their ability to take what would be typical marijuana and doing the analysis and really, really adding to that process. I mean, that's the way I think of it. I mean, county attorney might have a different opinion than what I have to say.
County Attorney Brown?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think in my comments I said the oils, the waxes, the resins, that's a conversation we need to have that does involve lots of other stakeholders. We have had some of those same problems, and frankly, right now, possession of any amount of the resinous form of marijuana is a felony because of those. I assume the legislature determined that was the reason for that. The challenge is that if you ask the BCA if an oil is the resinous form, they may not be able to answer that. They would have to know how it was processed. So how we define some of these terms is going to be important as well. But I think that's a conversation. Again, it goes from possession of a zero amount, so a single gummy bear is a felony. I'm not sure that's where we need to start, but I don't think it's just the county attorneys that need to be part of that conversation. We want to have that with law enforcement, the community, the lab people, so that we're not passing a bill that we can't enforce because we can't test from our perspective. So the resins, the oils, the waxes, that's a different issue that we need to have a different conversation on.
Senator Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I agree. We need to have those conversations because they are important and they do affect our communities. But one thing I did see in a lot of in this bill and a lot of talking today is the about not charging offenses and changing the levels. I'm just wondering if this bill needs to go to judiciary.
Representative Johnson, the chair of judiciary and I meet on a weekly basis to review the bills, and we arrive at agreements in terms of you know what the pathways are for these bills. I'll certainly take that possible suggestion into consideration as I discuss this with further with Chair Lesch. At this point, I don't think it needs to be there. You know, generally, don't hold us 100% to this, but generally, we're looking at judiciary in terms of procedures, you know, in courts. This is about changing a penalty, and so we feel that that's really more squarely, you know, within this committee. So it's a matter of just us being efficient. You know, with how we deliberate these bills. My guess is that at some point in this session, Chair Lesch's bill, my Lesch, and my bill, rather, will probably be married way down the line. That offers other opportunities. But I'll certainly keep that in mind as I continue my weekly conversations with Chair Lesch, but at this point I don't see a need for it to go to judiciary. And I'd certainly ask Chair Lesch to weigh in as well.
Well, Mr. Chair and Chair Johnson, I, you know, we talked about this when we saw the committee breakdown. One of my concerns was the bills like this that you're talking about changing criminal penalties. Technically, every single one of them could come to judiciary, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to just be duplicative for the sake of being duplicative. So we tried to work out at the front end. Jurisdictional areas, there's still going to be some overlap. But in the interest of not just having repeated hearings for the sake of having them, you know, we talked about this, we talked about others, and I don't think we need to see this for that reason. Unless there was a nuanced procedural change, something is named in it that is inserting or removing like an affirmative defense or something that would be applicable in the courtroom. Of course, this is a change in law, which means there's a change in jury instructions under the law. But I just think that is a duplicative interpretation, so that's why I said no.
Very well. We have questions from Representative Pinto, Representative Howard, and we just might be able to finish on time today. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be quick. As members know from other debates we've had, it's important to me how proposals to change penalties kind of fit into the broader structure of our criminal laws. And so I think this is terrific, and I really thank Representative Dean for his leadership on this and the Hennepin County Attorney's Office and County Attorney Freeman and County Attorney Brown. And I guess I just want to maybe have County Attorney Brown comment on this and how this. So it seems to me we made the changes to the sentencing guidelines into the statute a couple years ago to say that possession of a small amount of some other narcotics was rather than, you know, being a felony was a gross misdemeanor. And I guess this member seems to me to be a really straightforward, simply applying the same principle that rather than jumping from a petty misdemeanor to a felony, we have a series of steps, just like we do really with other drugs. And I've certainly found this as a prosecutor. So I wonder if County Attorney Brown could comment on the kind of the comparison with the change was made a couple years ago in that way.
County Attorney Brown.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, I believe this was as a part of the initial discussions in that bill that was done 2 years ago. Having been part of those discussions, I think it became clear that was going to be too much, and so this concept was taken out. But it's been something. There was a controlled substance work group through the legislature way back 2011, where these kinds of graduated penalties were first talked about, thought about. So I think it is a natural extension of the work that was done 2 years ago. And that saw a very big group of stakeholders come together on agreement for some changes, important changes to the controlled substance laws. And I would hope for a similar result here. And I know the Ramsey County Attorney's Office has adopted They've exercised their discretion as well. County Attorney Choi has implemented some changes to how they handle marijuana cases. So this is something that we've been talking about for a while, and that fits into that notion.
Thank you. And so then one final question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, because I know that there are broader discussions about legalization of adult personal use of cannabis, and I know Representative Dean's been a great leader on that. But in the meantime, at the very least, having these graduated penalties to have our have the scheme make sense so that the difference between 42.4 and 42.6 doesn't jump from a petty misdemeanor to a felony, boy, that makes great sense. So thank you again to both of you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had a comment or a question kind of along those lines of Representative Pinto that I really view this as a supportive bill in the when we look at the scheme of our legislation around these issues that span back many, many decades. And I'm wondering if the author would comment on the historical context here in terms of the significant mass incarceration rates we've seen, you know, dating back to the 70s and 80s, and how you see this bill fitting in to the overall discussion and really the impact on the community and also really the state budget as we look at what our laws have done in this zone over the course of, you know, many decades.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Howard, we can just chart almost directly the relationship between the war on drugs and the number of people that have been increased incarceration in the state of Minnesota. We know that when it comes to sale and possession of marijuana, that as Representative Long said, disproportionately has been impacting people of color. And when you look at our prison population in the state of Minnesota, it's disproportional, the number of people that are incarcerated that are people of color relative to the population. So, I mean, in some ways, this is a remedy that's been long overdue. But I also know that that the cost to our system has become unbearable. You know, I had the good fortune of going to a conference in San Diego where I heard Grover Norquist speak, an individual who you might not think was in favor of reducing penalties and encouraging individuals to lead a different life and so that they're less likely to recidivate. And the reason is the cost of getting individuals back on track in what a lot of us would consider a good full life is a lot less expensive than locking a person up. In the state of Texas, they were looking at the trajectory of their incarceration. And I think it was within the next 10 to 15 years, they were going to have to build two new prisons at a cost of over, I think it was each one was over $350 million to taxpayers. Well, you know, when you're looking at having to increase taxes, to lock people up, I think a lot of people start to pay attention. And this has made a lot of these issues less partisan than they have been in the past. So I think, you know, the place we've gotten to, unfortunately, has had a lot of casualties along the way. But now that we're here, I'm really excited that people are starting to understand how we need to address these issues. And also when it comes to, you know, drug use and alcohol use, that a lot of times this is a public health issue, not just a criminal justice issue. So I'll end it there, Mr. Chair. I can't see a clock, so I have no idea what time it is.
You're doing wonderful. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? We have 2-3 minutes. You can come forward. We only have 2 minutes. Please state your name for the record and give us your quick testimony.
I'll stick to it. I won't read any notes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Marcus Harkis. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Campaign for Full Legalization. We represent over 500,000 adult cannabis consumers in Minnesota and the nearly 10,000 Minnesotans who are criminalized each year. I'm here to testify in favor of this bill. I truly believe that it shouldn't be criminalized for any amount because it's a healing plant. It's not a crime. But this will go a long way to sparing lives from the ruins that being criminalized over this plant causes them. The most dangerous thing about cannabis is getting caught with it by the police, because you could lose your freedom, lose your job, lose your housing, lose your children, and more, over something that makes people feel better and has never killed anyone. So I would ask the committee to pass this bill, and thank Representative Dean for introducing it. But the bottom line is, prohibition is the problem. It's not cannabis. And full legalization is really the only solution. So thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Harkless. next testifier. We're down to about a minute.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brandon Borges. I'm the chair of Sensible Change Minnesota. I'm the policy arm of our volunteer-based nonprofit, Sensible Minnesota. I'm also an attorney. I practice in criminal law and some family law. Since 2015, Sensible Minnesota has worked with around 500 patients. The reason we're talking with you today is that in Minnesota, we have legalized oil and concentrate for patients to get access to our medical cannabis system. Now, we've also been successful in petitioning the Commissioner of Health for the inclusion of PTSD, autism, and Alzheimer's disease. Back in 2014, when this law was first passed, the medical cannabis law, it was estimated that around 30,000 patients would be helped, but today that number is sitting around 15,000 registered patients. Those people are still out there, and they're still using cannabis, and they're choosing, by and large, from what we can tell from our patient groups, to use concentrated cannabis products because it's not something that they smoke, and many people stay away from that. As of February 28th, there were 15,331 patients currently enrolled in the program, and over 7,000 of those who were once registered but either dropped their enrollment, either due to the high cost or they passed away. According to the January 2019 Medical Cannabis Program update, fewer than 11,000 of the Minnesotans, nearly 15,000 registered patients, have made a purchase from a registered state manufacturer. So the reason I'm talking about this today is that patients in Minnesota have to pay quite a bit more to access what I would like to see potentially included in this bill as an amendment at some point, which is concentrates. And in Illinois and Arizona, on adult use or markets in Oregon, for example, that same medicine is available for less than 10 cents per milligram, where we're paying around 18 to 24 cents per milligram in Minnesota. So it's a very substantial cost difference. As the criminal defense attorney, I get contacts from patients that call our firm and ask us to represent them in cases where they brought these concentrates from other states because they can't afford them here. And if they happen to transport them in Minnesota, they happen to have over $100 of concentrate in their vehicle, that's registered under Minnesota state law as a conveyance device, and they can kiss their vehicle goodbye as well. So,
Mr. Borges, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Yep, that's exactly it. While I do appreciate and understand as a defense attorney and as a representative of this organization that that this bill is going in the right direction, we would definitely like to see incorporated into the amendments, and we'll have discussions, of course, with the other county attorneys associations involved to try to get the protections for our patients, because we need to put our patients first. These are sick people in Minnesota. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Borges. I want to thank everyone for... Please, there should be no demonstrations in a committee hearing here. I want to thank everyone for the questioning, for the discussion, for the testimony here today. I thought it was a very rich session. I certainly walked out of here learning quite a bit more. Representative Dean, I'll have you last word, and then we'll move to lay the bill over.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I appreciate your support.
Very well. With that, the chair lays over House File 2013 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And members, there's no meeting this evening. We'll see you all back here tomorrow at our regular time. This committee stands adjourned.